have a Chevrolet. You know, I should probably pass this down to the end so that someone doesn't have to come all the way up here to me to get that. Maybe back to Kim, huh? Good evening. This is such a celebratory mood. I hate to dampen it, but we are going to get started on our meeting tonight. This is the May 2nd meeting of the Board of Trustees, and it is indeed a happy night for everyone. Glad to hear that. We do have something that was found that someone may want. It's a keys to a Chevrolet, some district keys, and some glasses that could see Ms. Holmes, if you're missing that. And so we'll just continue with our business. With the announcement of the closed session items, we did have a public employee evaluation tonight of the superintendent and also a public employee dismissal, discipline, or release. We are then moving on to consensus on the order of business. Do we have consensus? Yes, we do. And approval of the minutes of April 11th, 2017.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Ms. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
And then we're moving right on to the employees of the year. Oops, sorry, student representatives first. Hold on. Student representatives, hello.
Hello. All right, so to start out in San Luis Obispo High School news, all of our sports teams this week are competing in their league finals this week and next. So we wish them all luck going into that competition. In ASB news, this week and last week was our sustainability week, so we promoted environmental awareness throughout the week. And in that week, we did this thing called Penny Wars, and we raised money for Gravity Water, which is a foundation in Nepal, I believe, that brings clean water to people who don't have it. So we raised money for that, and the fundraiser is continuing to this week, so we'll be continuing till next Friday. May for San Luis Obispo High School and for SLO County is Bike Month, so we will be celebrating that as well. And so every day during May, if you ride your bike to school, you will be entered in a raffle and you'll be have a chance to win a prize. Also, this week is Staff Appreciation Week, so we're having a barbecue on Friday for all of our staff, and we're having a staff breakfast tomorrow morning. Our prom will be held on May 20th, and the theme is James Bond. 0017. And last Saturday, we had our Slowcella, which is our annual spring dance, which was held outside. So it's Slow's version of Coachella. In FFA news, over spring break, the chapter officers and some participating members went to the state competition up in Fresno. We took home wins in all three categories of public speaking, parliamentary procedure, and agricultural research. And one of our San Luis Obispo High School alumni, Luke O'Leary, actually was elected the California Board President. So that's awesome. In Skills USA, they also went to a competition over spring break, and we took home wins in technology design, technology drafting, welding fabrication, welding, automotive, and speaking, so that's great. Footloose will be opening up on May 11th and will run through the 19th. And in miscellaneous, San Luis Obispo High School was awarded a California Department of Education's Gold Ribbon Award. So we are a Gold Ribbon school, which is outstanding. This past Monday, so yesterday, was officially the College Decision Day, so all of us seniors got to write our names and where we're going for next year on the Career Center wall for everybody to see, so that was really exciting. The FCCLA Fashion Show will be held on May 6th at the Masonic Temple, so a lot of student designs and community organizations and shops will also be involved in that as well. Coming up on May 18th is going to be our ceramics program's Empty Bowls Slow. It's basically our ceramics program is making 500 to 1,000 bowls that you can purchase downtown at the farmer's market for $20, and you can take it to various restaurants around San Luis Obispo, and all of the proceeds will go to the Slow Prado Day Center. And last but not least, we had AP math competitions, AP Spanish, and a national Latin exam, and we performed outstanding in all three of those. So that's pretty much it for San Luis Obispo High School. Thank you.
Caroline, looks like Ms. Sheffer has a question for
yes.
you.
My question is, did you put your name on the Career Center wall?
And yes, ma'am.
What's your decision?
I'll be going to University of Georgia next year, and I'll be studying landscape architecture.
Wow. Great. Hold on.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Yes, and Morobe High School.
All right. Well, Morobe High School just completed our WASC accreditation visit. We had six WASC representatives visit us and talk with parents, staff, and students while visiting classrooms. The overall experience was very positive, so we have really high hopes for the results we will receive in July. Mrs. Brinkman, our English and psychology teacher, was also selected as the MBHS Teacher of the Year. She's worked extremely hard, and all of her students adore her. Over spring break, our counselor and dance team director, Mrs. Smith, took 18 dancers to New York City. They participated in lots of master dance classes and toured Juilliard while attending dance shows throughout their trip. All of the students who attended came back to MBHS more inspired than ever, so that was really cool. ASB is holding our elections for MBHS ASB Executive Board and also the Class Executive Board this Thursday. Students running for ASB Executive Board positions, such as President, Vice President, Secretary, and Treasurer, will be giving speeches to the entire student body, as well as current ASB President, which is myself, and current Senior Class President, Audrey MacDonald. We will be giving final addresses. Class candidates will be presenting campaign videos to students in their grades during their English classes, and voting will take place on Thursday and Friday.
Thanks. In Morro Bay High School, Auto Shop is having a new facility's grand opening and car show this Friday. We're going to be having root beer floats to students who participate by dressing up in 50s day theme wear. Also this Friday is our Cinco de Mayo celebration. The event is being put on by the English Learner Advisory Committee and is raising money for scholarships for students graduating from the English Learning Program. The fiesta will be taking place in front of the school on May 5th this Friday from 4 to 7 with food, games, soccer, and a lot for people to do. Sophomores in the world history classes have been working hard on their Save the Children campaign. Over the last few weeks, the students sold over 80 shirts and received cash donations to fundraise $1,284 to send to the Save the Children Foundation. A group of sophomores and juniors are taking a college day trip to CSU Channel Islands and UC Santa Barbara this coming Monday. Also in sports, football is coming back. Brandon McGinley, Spencer Cecil, Danny Koval, Luis Alvarez, Bowden Reber, Jason Bourne, Josh Skiffington and Noah Clapp are representing the Morro Bay Pirates in the FCA All-Star Game tomorrow at 7 at San Maria. The football team's already raised one half their goal for new equipment, $10,000 out of the $20,000 goal. And boys volleyball swept Napomo off on their senior night and are on track to join our boys baseball team on the road to CIF. Thank you.
Sir, will
Catherine?
You be our new?
No, go ahead.
I was just asking if you were going to be our new representative next year.
I think so.
Yes, you think so? Would you care to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Mark Hagiani.
Mark, very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Ellis, is there a similar tradition at Morro Bay High School where the seniors put their names and where they're going?
Yeah, we do. It's a little bit later for us, but yes, in the College and Career Center.
And what will you be writing on that one?
I'll be attending Cal Poly for architectural engineering.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Mark. Thanks. Mark, I just have a quick question, and because this is taped, it might be a free advertisement. The start time of the auto shop is, I think the ribbon cutting is at noon.
Okay, yeah, I think it starts at 1 o'clock.
Okay, and... Oh, I thought the ribbon cutting was at noon. Okay, and
yeah, ribbon okay. at 1, but there will be students and the car show will be happening, I think, right when our lunch starts, which is 12:20.
Great. And then also on the Cinco de Mayo?
4 o'clock. 4 to 7.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, student representatives. And you're very welcome to stay with us now, especially since we're going to be acknowledging the teachers, if you would care to stay. But if you need to leave at any time during the rest of the meeting, you're welcome to do so. Thank you. And we move on to item number 5.02, which is the Employees of the Year, and our presenter is Ms. Newland.
This is such an exciting time of year. I love this board meeting. So tonight I have the pleasure of introducing all of our Employees of the Year to you, certificated, classified, and administrative. So what I'm going to ask you to do is, as a board, I'm going to talk about our Employees of the Year, and then they're going to go through and shake your hands and receive their certificate at the end over here. So if you could come in front of the dais and... be ready for them, that would be great. First, like to bring up our Clerical Support Employee of the Year, Kim Holmes. And I'm going to read to you what her nominee, what she was nominated for. So Kim Holmes is the gold standard in secretaries. She has a job that can be stressful, but this person who wrote this says she has never seen her grouchy or flustered. Is that true, Kim? She knows so much about many different aspects of our school district and is always happy to share her knowledge and expertise. She is a wonderful lead secretary. All the other secretaries in the district know that if they can't figure something out amongst themselves, Kim would be able to help. The person who wrote this said, I have requested help from Kim when I have trouble formatting a Word document on a number of occasions. She is happy to help me, and she teaches me as she edits it. I have learned so much from her, and when she notices that I'm still doing workarounds, she does not judge me. I feel lucky to have a go-to co-worker like Kim. Congratulations, Kim.
Just stand right here.
The next person that I'd like to recognize is Michelle Hedrick, the School Support Employee of the Year. And this is a summary of some of the things that have been written about Michelle. Michelle is the library tech from Hawthorne, for those of you who do not know Michelle. Michelle is an amazing woman. She gives so much of her own time and money to make the school library a sanctuary and inclusive place for all of our students. She opens the library before school, during lunch, and if possible, after school. She organizes arts, crafts, and challenges for the students. Michelle is a great resource for all teachers. If we email her about a book, she quickly responds. If the book is not available, she offers other comparable ones. She often helps students and teachers troubleshoot technology challenges at any time of the day, never hesitating to drop what she is doing to work as a team and help figure out solutions. Not only does she create a colorful and cheery space that fosters a love for reading and an appreciation of books, she initiates many programs to support student learning. These include running programs such as the Battle of the Books and facilitating guest speakers and presenters to make community connections. Congratulations to Michelle.
Thank you.
Our next employee of the year is our administrative management employee, and that is Rick Mayfield. So Rick received, like, I don't know, 16 nominations for this award from everybody on the staff. And so this is just a small paragraph about Rick. Rick has been the principal of Pacheco Elementary for 11 years. Anyone that works with him knows his incredible and positive leadership style and hardworking nature. He is always willing to listen and to support his teachers and students. It is so impressive to me to see him know the name of every student on a campus and really take his time to know each family. He truly sets the tone for the school and makes it one that everyone looks forward to coming to work every day. Rick gives his presence. When visiting Pacheco, you will see him in classrooms, listening to students read or responding to their writing pieces with genuine words of praise and encouragement. Rick motivates everyone on the Pacheco staff to work as a team and to achieve the vision for their school. Rick is an outstanding principal. He has high expectations, respect, appreciation, trust, compassion, and a genuine love for the staff and the students of the school. Because of this, our administrative atmosphere our school atmosphere at Pacheco is warm and accepting. Rick appreciates and acknowledges the hard work of staff, and he is concerned about everyone as an individual and a teacher. Congratulations to Rick. Our next category is Physical Support Employee of the Year, and this person received also the overall Classified Employee of the Year, and that is Mr. Ted Rapley. In case you hadn't guessed, Mr. Rapley is our lead mechanic. Mr. Rapley started his journey with San Luis Coastal in 1987. He maintains the highest level of credentials available as a master technician, and his mechanical knowledge is sought after from other organizations, including air quality control. He believes in education, and he has never stopped learning. He is respected by California Highway Patrol, which I saw the other day because they were there to see him get his award, and works with those on his team to ensure that terminal inspections are successful and positive. The safety of our children is his utmost priority. Ted was instrumental in transportation being awarded over $1 million in grants. He works tirelessly to guide and assist those under his charge. He has been called upon all hours of the day and night, and without hesitation, he answers his call of duty. Mr. Rapley honors and values education. It is not a surprise his two children are educators. Ted competes in marathons and is happily married. We often share how thankful we in this department are for not only our families, but those we work with, and being able to be a small part of the big picture of education for our children. Congratulations to Ted. And before I proceed with the site teachers of the year, we do have photos that are being taken by a junior at San Luis High School, Lily, and she's going to be taking those photos right out there. So I just want to let all of you know that if you were a district winner, then you will go out there, and Lily will be taking much better photos than I could ever take in the past. So those are the photos that will hang on our wall in the personnel office. So I'd like to recognize William Walters for being last year's Teacher of the Year and nominated for California State Teacher of the Year. Next, I'd like our site-level Teachers of the Year to come up, and I will read each site-level Teacher of the Year. We have two that were not able to attend tonight, and that is Patricia Nolan from Del Mar and Matt Robinette from Los Osos Middle School. However, I'd like the others to come up here and be recognized. So first, Fiona Lloyd Moffitt from Baywood, Site Teacher of the Year. Next is Lisa McCarty from Monarch Grove. Denise Emerson from C.L. Smith. Now, you guys have to stay in order because you're going to be going through here and they're going to know their certificates. Lauren, we'll see if this is in order. I'll let you guys figure that out over there. Lauren Canudela from Lambs, Laguna. Deanne Lancaster, who was nominated from both Hawthorne Elementary and Los Ranchos. Blair Brinkman, Morro Bay High School. Kate Stevens, San Luis High School. So these were our site teachers of the year, and as you can imagine, this was a very, very hard decision to choose among these phenomenal individuals for our district teacher of the year. But the committee met, and the committee has selected Fiona Lloyd Moffitt as the district teacher of the year. So I'm going to read a little bit about Fiona so I can embarrass her even further. It was great seeing going to her classroom the other day on, I believe it was last Friday, and seeing all the preschoolers there and the chants that the Baywood teachers came up with, and seeing Fiona's own parents there was just wonderful. So Fiona, excellent teaching requires knowledge, skills, artistry, passion, and commitment. Fiona is a rare individual who embodies these five words. Just as a symphony touches one soul because of the orchestration of each part into a whole unimaginable by those looking only at the parts. Fiona's teaching brings together all these knowledge, skills, artistry, passion, and commitment in a way that transcends common understanding of each word on its own. She is masterful in her work because of the intention she puts into each part of her practice and her care in bringing each developed part together in a manner that is uncommon and transformational. Fiona is a teacher you are lucky to meet once in a lifetime because she makes each of us better as professionals just for knowing her professional practice. This, of course, was written by her colleagues. Fiona's classroom and instruction exemplifies student engagement. From the minute that students enter the door, they are immersed in social, emotional, and academic learning. Thematic units are implemented over the course of weeks, which are rich in language, literacy, content, and experiences surrounding that unit. Her dramatic play area is transformed each and every unit. The students truly begin to take on the roles. The most amazing part is that due to her intentional and strategic thinking method of teaching, the students are able to discuss, read, and write about the topics they are studying. We would like to congratulate Fiona on this honor. I'm going to ask that you guys go through here, and then Luana will make sure you get the right one at the end, so you get to go through and say, everybody would like to say congratulations to you. And again, afterwards, we have photos for the district teacher of the year and the employees of the year. Thank you. Okay. We would like to end with a celebration and take a break and have some cookies. And I know that many people would like to speak to the employees of the year. So we're going to take a five, is that right? Okay. 5 minute break, Catherine? Okay. 5 minute break.
Are we okay?
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. Well, that was a wonderful celebration of our teachers. And we are now moving on with item number 6.01, correspondence. We have a letter from Ms. Neuhauser regarding funding and SED rates in our district. I also received an email from a young man named Alex Reich, and some others may have as well. Is there anyone else who would like to report any kind of correspondence? Seeing none. This is the part of the meeting where if you have any comments that you would like to make and you can't wait for the other items to stay with us for longer, you could make your comments now if you wish.
And we have one person who is requested to speak, and that's Katie Bravante.
Good evening, Dr. Prater and members of the board. I'm here this evening to invite all of you to our upcoming music assemblies for the elementary students in our district. A couple years ago, you approved the budget to purchase new, brand new band instruments that were sorely needed for our elementary students, and this is a chance for you to see them in action. They have meant so much to our students. Especially those who could not afford to rent or purchase their own instruments, to have the option and many options to play. So I wanted to highlight three of our upcoming concerts, but I believe all the elementary schools will also have music assemblies. The first is next Wednesday, May 10th at 7 p.m. at the Morro Bay High School. All of our Coast Band students will be performing. It's just under an hour, and it's a wonderful chance for the you can see the progress through the years. And we will also have the same in San Luis at the end of the month on the 31st at the San Luis High School. And then I wanted to highlight the Pacheco Music Assembly that we're having Thursday, May 18th at 11 a.m. This is the first year I've taught ukulele to my fourth graders, and it has been such a pleasure to teach them. And so they'll be performing with all the students and school singing along. and the fifth graders will have the recorders, and the sixth graders will be performing two of their promotion songs, and one of which, nine of those sixth graders will be performing the accompaniment. So we have a drum set, we have keyboard, piano, three other percussionists, three string players, so it's been a real treat to work with them at lunchtime, working on that little band we have going there, more contemporary band than our traditional band. So we'd love to have you come. If you can make any of those dates, we'd love to have you. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. That sounds like a blast. Ms. Neuhauser. Have a moment of technical difficulty here.
Well, I think you do have a copy of this one. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I don't have a copy, and I wanted to have a copy up on the board. Hello, my name is Judy Neuhauser. I live in Los Osos, and I'm here to talk a little bit about funding. I know you're going to be talking about the LCAP today, and that's not really budget, and so I'm thinking a little bit ahead in terms of budget. I know that the San Luis Coastal District has been giving money to Pacheco School and only Pacheco School over and above what it gets from Title I and any other funding that comes from the state or the federal government. And if you look at your first graph, you'll look at 2001 when Pacheco was in year five. And this was before it was fully implemented at Pacheco. And what you see is that when you look at the number of low-income children in the district, Pacheco was really high. Actually, Hawthorne was higher, but Pacheco was very high. And it probably made sense, especially within having to service two languages, having to buy books, having to buy materials, having to develop materials, having to translate materials, and so on. So if you look at the second page and the next graph, where it looks at 2001 compared to 2009, so I skipped ahead 8 years, what you'll notice is that Pacheco actually, as far as low-income kids, went down, and everybody else in the district, with the exception of Los Ranchos, went up. And Monarch Grove went up severely, as did C.L. Smith, and Baywood made huge jumps in percentages. So then you go down to the next one, it has Tricolor, and that's 2016. And again, you look at the very high jump. Sinsheimer jumped very high. C.L. Smith jumped high. Baywood jumped high. Del Mar jumped. And so when you look at it, actually, Pacheco, in terms of the percentage of students of low income, is down in fifth place. So if you go on to the next one, I just put them in ranked order. I colored the blue ones are for the city schools, the yellow ones are for the coast schools, and the pink one is the one with the only school that you're giving that $100,000 to. It used to be $180,000. And by this point, it's gotten to close to $2 million that has gone into the school over and above what any other school in the district has received. And when you look at it, it's actually, one, two, three, four, it's the sixth one. Both Los Osos Middle School, Del Mar, Baywood, are higher than Pacheco in terms of low income. So I think you need to look at how the demographics have changed and ask yourselves, is this really where the money needs to go to serve our students who are most in need? So the next ones had to do with the law scores, which is the language skills and native language, and those are the two graphs on the next paper. The next one is kinder, and the one below it is first grade. And what you notice, the blue is Pacheco, the red is other elementary schools. The law scores of the students going into Pacheco are higher than the law scores of the kids going into the neighborhood elementary schools. And it takes a lot of money to be able to support that. So when you're making your budget decisions, I think you need to address that issue of how it has changed and what it is you're going to do. Thank you very much. I have 25 seconds.
Thank you. And we'll be moving on now to item number 7.01. If there is no one else who wishes to speak. And moving on to 7.01, this is a business and budget update by Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, a lot is flying around the state capitol right now in terms of legislation and bills being passed and going through committees, those types of things. So it is interesting in that the there is a movement afront to get rid of the reserve cap for basic aid school districts, kind of moving forward. So we'll see how that ends up, along with a lot of other, you know, kind of preliminary data. On a negative aspect, it looks like April revenues were down. And so in terms of the governor moving forward with the May revise coming up probably within the week, it looks like he's, you know, most likely going to stay with his pretty conservative estimate in terms of financials for this year. So we'll see how that ends up, and I'll definitely report to the board as we hear about the May revise and if there's any changes from January. Kudos to both Annie Sharp and to Anthony Palazzo for working with Darla Batistic at Teach. So they've had some parent concerns about traffic, the bus stop, Slack Street, with construction going on, those types of things. So they've been out on the side working with the city, just kind of, you know, going above and beyond to try to solve the problems with Darla. And so I know that they have a couple of particular scenarios to move forward on, and so working with the site principal, but I wanted to recognize them for their work in that area. Also, another kudos to Anthony. He's been working with our kind of energy advisor to look at our current PG&E rate structure. And so with some of the new rate changes coming through, it looks as though we could potentially save up to roughly about $25,000 a year by changing over some of our rate structure. So I'm actually going to have that consultant from Avala Partners come out and kind of update the board on kind of what he found after going through this audit to share, and I think it'll be some interesting information for the board. And then lastly, we did have the food service, Erin Primer, just can't stop herself from, you know, one thing after another, it seems like, different events and great things happening for kids. And so we had the Cattle Women's Association out at Hawthorne last week. And so they had donated some grass-fed beef to the school. We had Anthony, the chef Anthony, put together a really nice meal for the kids. And so it was just, again, just it seems like we're really moving in a positive direction in terms of our food service department, the things she's doing, and where we're headed. So very excited about those changes.
That's terrific. Thank you, Mr. Palazzo, for that extra work on that grant. That's great. And now we move on to educational update with Ms. McGrath.
Great. Since the high school students did such a thorough job, they stole a lot of my thunder here, but I would happy to share some positive things. Thursday, we'll be celebrating both Laguna and Slohi at the Gold Ribbon Schools in Santa Clara. So congratulations to both of those schools for their ongoing work. Moore Bay High School, as they mentioned, had a really positive WASP visit, so you know, big congrats to Sean Allstad, who did a fabulous job organizing that. It's a massive self-reflection, and so they really did a lot of great work with the staff and a lot of hard work from a lot of people there. So great job to them. Slohi FFA and skills, as they mentioned, some incredible results there. And then just the reminder about Morro Bay Auto Show, Friday, 12 to 5. Looks like the ribbon cutting's around 1-ish. So thanks. Lots of great things happening.
Thank you, Ms. McGrath. And then on to Measure D. Is that Mr. Pinkerton again? Yep.
Yeah, we have a couple of board items tonight that we'll close up some projects, which is fantastic. And we did complete our process for selecting leaseback contractors at the C.L. Smith, San Luis Obispo High School, Morro Bay High School. So I will be sharing kind of the process and overview with the board at our next study session next Thursday. So hopefully to get you updated and kind of share that with you. I'm excited about a lot of these projects. We're at that point now where kind of the planning is we're near completion, where we're actually going to start to see some construction and big things happening on our campuses. So very excited about that. And then I'll end on, you know, as part of Measure D, we have been doing some infrastructure improvements, so like new water line at Del Mar Elementary School. And through that process, we've had concerns, Dr. Prater, with PTA leader meetings, those types of things about the quality of water and kind of the new hot item and commodity at schools is to have those water bottle filler stations. So we've kind of testing them out, put them in a couple schools, trying things. But we actually went out and did a kind of a water test with the PTA parents. We actually did it with our cabinet group as well. So kind of took a sample bottle of water from each of those school sites that reflected kind of a different water. And so it was interesting, the blind test. And I'm not going to share too much with you right now because we are actually going to put you through the same test during that study session on Thursday. So it's interesting dynamic in terms of some of the water, and I will tell you that Del Mar's water actually scored higher than bottled water. So it was good, right? So it was interesting to hear that. So what we've done. What we've done to work on some of those things is the sites where it is a concern. You know, we're trying some filtered stations to see if that makes a difference first. And so again, just kind of moving forward. So I think currently we have a filtered station at San Luis Obispo High School. We're just putting one at Los Ranchos right now, which kind of had the lower rating of the schools. And so we're going to try that to see what impact it has, and then we'll be sharing that, again, talking about that with the board on Thursday to get some further direction in terms of. As we move forward and we're doing projects and updating sites and what we're doing.
Is there a water refillable station here at the district office?
Yes, it's up in the it's in the hallway as you walk through.
Oh, so we don't have to have these anymore. Is that what you're telling us? We
yeah,
can bring our own
true.
Bottles. We will do
save
that
some
from
plastic,
now.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I have a follow-up question, Catherine, if I may. So staff is comfortable with kids all lugging water bottles, or they probably already deal with some aspect of that. But
there's
if we make
aspect.
Water fill stations, they have to have something to fill.
Yes.
So, okay, just raising it.
Most of the kids have currently now. I think for us, it's you know, from the wellness committee, those types of things. So healthy lifestyle, drinking more water at site. So it seems like it's been a positive push in order, and really a big concern. I think that's come up a lot at the PTA leader meeting. So a lot of sites were kind of moving that direction. And before we had PTAs putting filler stations in, you know, we wanted, let's make sure that the one that we put in works. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure that it's going to work for a long time, right? That, you know, so it's trying to, you know, make sure that we do this right as we move forward.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Just to comment on Walter's point, yeah, it's only when you see them surreptitiously sharing their water with the group and then trying to hide the bottle from you is when you really have some, you know, maybe some grounds to worry about it.
That's a high school teacher.
Yes, a high school teacher right there. Yes, so moving on then to item number 8.02. Which is a,
8.01.
Excuse me, 8.01, which is the resolution for Teacher Appreciation Week.
This is for Teacher Appreciation Week, and some schools are celebrating it this week, and some schools are celebrating it in the next couple of weeks. You'll also see the classified resolution will be coming forward to you at the next board meeting, but this is the resolution that we would like you to adopt for Teacher Appreciation Week. And I don't know if you would like to care to read this, Mrs. Eisendrath-Rogers or Dr. Eisendrath-Rogers, or whether you would prefer that I do that.
I would love for you to read that, Ms. Newland.
Okay. Whereas it is appropriate that we recognize our teachers and express gratitude for the interest and concern they have for our students, and whereas our teachers frequently and often selflessly participate in non-classroom activities that enhance the education of our students, and whereas along with academic instruction, teachers provide students with valuable guidance, support, and encouragement toward helping students become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas providing quality education to our young people continues to be our never-ending challenge as it represents society's greatest and most lasting gift to new generations, and whereas the future of our state and country depends largely on the work of dedicated and professional teachers, and whereas school teachers are relied upon to ensure that our children receive proper instruction in a wide range of subjects, now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District proclaims May 1st to 5th, 2017, as Teacher Appreciation Week and encourages all citizens to participate in observance to express their appreciation. and then that would be passed and adopted. That would be your job.
I'll take that one back. Thank you, Ms. Newland. That was well done. Is there a motion, Mr.?
I'd just regret that we did not move this to the top of the agenda. There could have been some teachers here to be appreciated. Not that those of you
we
who
have
are...
We have Katie here.
Judy, yeah.
And we have former teacher Judy, so...
Yes. We appreciate you especially
it, right,
for being
Katie?
Here. I will move approval of Resolution 19-16-17, and thank you, teachers and former teachers.
Thank you. There's a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Buckman. This is a roll call vote.
Mr. Millar? Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Aye.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Fantastic.
And now moving on to 8.02. And also Ms. Newland.
Yes. So at the board meeting on February 21st, the board adopted the superintendent's 2017 to 2018 budget reduction recommendations. And in these recommendations, the superintendent presented a reduction due to the consolidation of the secondary director of ISLA and the director of IS&T. The decision was made to make two changes in order to accomplish these savings. First, we moved our current secondary director of ISLA, Kimberly McGrath, into the assistant superintendent position and did not replace the secondary director of ISLA. Secondly, we decided to place a temporary part-time manager in the IS&T department for the remainder of the year while we analyzed our needs for supervision in this department. Next, as the personnel director, I surveyed the other districts of similar size in our county in order to make recommendations for staffing. We considered the fact that technology is a major focus of our district, and through our research, we discovered that all the medium and large districts in our county have either a chief technology officer or an information technology director. We worked with the personnel commission on updating the job description that we already had for the IT director, and then made important modifications to the job description, included moving the supervision of this position from the business department to the educational services department, and to focus on technology and innovation as it relates to student achievement. The commission determined the same salary range as previously was established, felt that that was appropriate for the knowledge, skills, and abilities that were required of this position. The position closed yesterday, and I was incredibly pleased today while screening the candidates, both of the number of candidates and the high caliber of the applicants that we have received. So tonight, the resolution before you is about the hiring process. Due to the fact that this position is under the purview of the merit system for classified employees, a typical classified recruitment limits the final hiring manager to three ranks or three eligible candidates, even if other qualified candidates exist. It's one of the rules of the merit system. There are few exceptions to this rule. One of these exceptions is before you tonight in this resolution. In a district of our size, which is 10,000 ADA or less, we are permitted to have two classified management employees that are designated as, in the Ed Code, senior management. Ryan's position is one of those classified managers, and we are permitted to have one more. This means two things according to when you pass this resolution, according to the Education Code. First, the person in this information technology director position will never gain permanency, so they will always be an at-will employee. And the second thing that this means is the hiring manager, in this case Kimberly McGrath and the superintendent, Dr. Prater, are able to see all qualified candidates rather than just three. So they will see everyone that we deem in our department to be qualified, to have passed the first interview process. Those are the only two things that this resolution does. was such an important position. We wanted the opportunity to see as many qualified candidates as possible, and this resolution allows us to do that. Questions that you may have?
Mr. Miller.
As I understand it, this resolution is to make the position a senior management position, and it's independent of the selection process to fill this position.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Also, just a point of clarification, it sounds like this particular position has a very interesting set of skill sets that go along it, so not that many people would actually have that combination of skill sets, sort of a...
Yeah, we're kind of looking for four major areas. We're looking for somebody that understands technology, of course, all the ins and outs of, you know, networking and all those kinds of things. We're looking for somebody that understands curriculum assessments and curriculum instruction and assessments. We're looking for somebody with strong leadership abilities, and we're looking for somebody with the ability to supervise a staff. So those are the four main things that we're looking for. It's hard to find all four of those people in one person, and particularly from an interview process and a resume, you don't always know whether the three people you move ahead are going to be able to do all four of these things. So this allows them to be able to see more people and to make... And I'm going to be part of the first, you know, in the merit system, you create a list, and then the list goes on, and normally they only get to see the top three on that list. So I'm going to be part of my responsibility is going to be to create that list, and then I won't have any responsibilities after that. You have to kind of either be part of establishing the list in the beginning or selecting the person in the end. And so I'll be part of the beginning, and Kimberly and Eric and whoever they choose to be with them will be part of selecting this position once we move the candidates ahead. But again, they will be able to see more than three candidates or three ranks.
Mr. Quisenberry? No. Okay. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Mrs. Newhouser.
Jeannie Newhouser, Los Osos. I'm just a little confused and want some clarification. It was said that this job is funded at the same as the other job, and the other job being what Kimberly McGrath left or what the IST person is presently is one question. And I also am curious as to how the progression of funding will go over the years, as it's a different kind of position now that it's moved into senior management. In 10 years down the line, are you going to be paying this person a lot more than you would have paid the IST person, or is it similar in what you would do to what Kimberly's the position was?
Thank you.
Great questions. The first is the position that I'm referring to before is we used to have an IS&T director. And so it is that position that I'm referring to. So it is the same. We took that job description, made major modifications to that job description, really by moving it under educational services and by having a focus on student achievement. So that's the first major modification that we made. But we took the same salary. So it's basically at the same level as it was before. I think the term senior management is a little misleading for people. I think you feel like they're a contract employee that gets their own individual contract. That is not the case here. It's the term that the education code uses for people that you can do this with, which is not allow them to have permanency and allow an unranked list. So in other words, you can see more than three ranks. That's all it does. It doesn't put them on a contract. It doesn't make them a member of cabinet. It doesn't do that. It just does those two things. It exempts them from permanency. So they're an at-will employee, as is Ryan. And it allows them to see more than three ranks. That's it. It doesn't do anything different, and it's very much like the Director of Information Technology was in this district prior, and what Kimberly was doing in addition to all the other crazy, you know, things that Kimberly was doing.
Mr. Unger, would that answer your question?
So just to clarify, this job has been given a range on the classified salary schedule, is that correct?
Yes, the Personnel Commission has
established a numerical value for that job, and within that numerical value is a range of salaries.
Correct.
Okay.
It's on the salary schedule,
right.
The same place it was before when we had a former director of IT.
Right. And so the progression through the steps, as it were, will be on a regular basis, which is published and which is, again, part of the classified system.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, it's exactly like every other position.
Right.
It's very similar to the director of BG&T, Building, Grounds, and Transportation, or the director of fiscal. We're just taking this position and saying, we are allowed two, so we have one. Let's take one more position out and move it into not gaining permanency and being able to see more than three.
Ms. Bravanti.
Thank you. I also had a question, since you were talking about with our budget reductions, with Diablo Canyon closing, and the choice not to replace Kim McGrath's position, and then now hiring that, how that affects our budget reductions.
So it still will be a budget reduction because we're not replacing the secondary director of ISLA. That was the position that was not replaced. So whereas before we had Rick Robinette and we had Kimberly, each one of those has been replaced at a much lower salary. But instead of having a assistant superintendent of all the things that Rick had after his name, now we have that same position with Kimberly in it, and instead of having a director of secondary and technology, we're going to have a director of just technology. So that's back to kind of what you had had previously, I believe, 5 years ago.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Bravante?
This is not a study session, folks. You know.
I believe she was, Ms. Bravanti was asking about the number of employees, and I believe what you've said, Ms. Newland, is that it's a fewer number of employees.
Perhaps.
It doesn't. No, it's not.
Perhaps. It's the same number of employees, two employees. You're still going to have an assistant superintendent, and you're going to have a director. But whereas in the past it was an assistant superintendent and a director of secondary and technology.
Yes, I know.
It's only going to be a director of technology. And Kimberly's going to hold on to the secondary. Where the savings comes is that these people are much less expensive than the people that were further on the salary schedule.
Okay, thank you. I think that does answer that question.
And so then the follow-up question is that with this reduction, it doesn't seem like it would probably be as much of a reduction as stated in the resolution of the budget reduction for next year. It's the same dollar amount.
I'd have to look into it to verify, but I'm sure it's – I don't know what was in there. But
what you adopted and approved in February hasn't changed. I stated that this is what we were going to do clearly in February when you adopted my recommendations. This is us trying to find the best person for that position. The numbers in the reduction proposal have not changed.
That's clear.
But this resolution is not about that. I just wanted to make sure that I gave a lot of background information, but this resolution is only about designating a second senior management level position, which exempts them from these hiring practices. That's all. That it doesn't do anything else other than those two things. And it's an opportunity for us to have two. And we should have two within this organization, two important classified management positions that are not permanent, that are not tenured, where we can say, you know what, we hold you to these expectations, and you haven't met these expectations, and therefore we have the ability to replace you. Because classified managers within this organization after a year are tenured. And so you have to go through a release process, a dismissal process that's pretty difficult. Not impossible, as you know, we have dismissed classified employees in the past, but you would have to go through that same process. With this position, you would not have to do that. This person would not have permanency.
Mr. Unger.
Well, I think it's clear to me that we need to make sure that our technology plan and our technology is implemented correctly. I was frankly concerned about Mrs. McGrath having to supervise both of those departments. There's just, from my perspective, there's so much going on with technology and so many critical areas and so many dangers, mm-hmm. that failure for us to have someone in that supervisory position puts, I think, our students in our district at significant risk, if nothing else, from blackmail, for mm-hmm. example. So I'm going to move the resolution.
I'd like to ask a question.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Mr. Unger covered most of it in his previous question. So the changes to the description that you mentioned and other aspects of this position and the salary range were all approved by the Personnel Commission, who is an independent commission in charge of our classified employee merit system.
Correct. And thank they've you. Had two readings of this, the last reading being last week.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. No more further discussion. I see there's a motion on the floor by Mr. Unger, seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. This also is a roll call vote.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're moving on now to discussion items, item number 9.01. This is being presented by Ms. McGrath.
Good evening. This evening, Mrs. Frost, Mrs. Shields, and I will discuss the Local Control Accountability Plan's requirements, an overview, and an outline document related to our five focus areas for the 2017-18 school year. This has been a very collaborative effort, and we're excited about where this is headed. So the requirements. You will see that our 2017 to 2020 plan summary, this section provides just an overview of the LCAP, some performance based on state and local indicators, and then a summary of the LCAP budget. The second component is our annual update, and this section provides a review on the progress toward our expected outcomes. Next, you will find stakeholder engagement. And this section of the LCAP outlines the process that was used to engage community and how this engagement contributed to the development of the LCAP. Tonight, we plan to share with you a summary of the input that has been received and gathered so far this year. As you know, sites are continuing to gather community and parent data. And gathering LCAP input, of course, is an ongoing process for us. Tonight, we're sharing with you an outline, just a skeleton structure of the LCAP. We will continue to adjust as needed based on additional input that is gathered after this presentation. One of the ways we gathered input, student input, was through the Superintendent Student Senate that I love the high school students have renamed as you can only do as a high school student, right? This video clip shows just a few of the highlights from the students' perspective. Much more input was gathered than just the short bit that we plan to share tonight in the video. And the details of that information, if you'd like to see all of the input accounted for, can be found on the LCAP tab of our website. I think this would be a good time to show the video, Ms. Holmes. While we're pulling that up, maybe I can tell you the other two required areas of the LCAP, and then we'll go back to the video. The other two areas are the goals, actions, expenditures, and progress indicators. So you'll see that this section lists the needs that have been identified and goals that have been selected to address those needs. The fifth required area is a demonstration of increased or improved services for unduplicated pupils. So this last section identifies the amount of funds in the LCAP based on the number and concentration of low-income foster youth and our English learner students. So now we can hear from the students about their Superintendent Student Senate.
My name is Annika Velasquez, and I'm in the seventh grade, and I go to Los Osos Middle School.
My name is Brayden Pell. I'm in the 8th grade, and I also go to Los Osos Middle School.
Hi, I'm Alexis Haas, and I'm from Laguna Middle School, and I'm in 8th grade.
And I'm Evan Clausen, and I'm also from Laguna Middle School in 8th grade.
I'm Joe Young. I go to Pacific Beach, and I'm a senior.
My name is Percy Jones, and I go to San Luis Obispo High School.
My name is Andrea Hernandez, and I also go to SLO High.
Hi, I'm Ellie Fryer.
Hi, I'm Luis Alvarez.
Hi, I'm Caden Udotti.
Hi, I'm Hiram Burroughs.
Hi, I'm Marissa Dinsmore.
I'm Simon Jansen. We are the Superintendent Student Senate, or for short.
I thought it was really interesting to be able to hear the different perspectives from all the different schools that participated in the Student Senate, because everybody had different needs and hopes for their school in the future, and it was really interesting to see how it all came together and how it differed from school to school.
I had an amazing experience at the Student Senate. It was so interesting to hear what, like, the other schools had in common with us and what they didn't have in common, and what we're struggling with and what they're struggling with is sometimes the same thing, and I think that that's really important for us to understand.
I felt that at the Student Senate meeting we were actually heard, and what we said would actually make a difference.
It was really nice to see what everyone else had to say and the contrast between Morabe High and SLO High and our school.
I loved going to the Student Senate because I got to hear all the different perspectives the students have about their schools and the issues that they see.
We had a great experience at the Student Senate. It was really cool for students to be able to directly talk to the people running our school district.
One thing I learned is that each kid needs their own environment at school and has their own wants for what each school place should be like.
I learned that a lot of things that are happening here at Loams are actually ahead of a lot of the things that are happening at the other school sites, including the high schools, and how many opportunities we actually have compared to some other schools.
Majority at PB think that the teachers care about them.
I learned that our schools are having a problem with trying to follow the school's guidelines and their mission, and also trying to provide a better, safer, and more welcoming environment for kids outside of school.
Something I learned was that other schools had similar issues that we did.
I think that one thing we should keep doing is our STEAM program. The sixth grade STEAM program is perfect, when the seventh grade STEAM program is really interesting. I feel like we learn a lot through that.
We have a lot of great before and after school activities at Loams, including a zero period program, which allows students to take an extra elective if they'd like to.
One thing that we should continue to do is keeping the clubs at our school, because it makes every kid feel welcomed and open in a certain environment or place at their location.
One thing I'd want to keep at PV would be the advisor-advisee system. It gives a lot of help and support to every individual.
I think one thing that should be kept over the years is that the administration should keep having a strong presence on campus.
We'd like to continue incorporating technology in the classroom.
One thing I hope to work on for our school at the next Student Senate is getting more bilingual teachers who can speak more languages than just English, because some students need more help in other languages, and we want to be able to provide that.
We have some great classes here at Loams, but we could really use some more classes that allow and go into a deeper understanding of certain subject areas. For example, we have advanced English and math classes, but an advanced history and science class would also be really nice.
A lot of students are unhappy with the lunch options that we have.
We'd like to continue preparing students for life after high school.
One thing that we can need to keep working on at our school is better classroom facilities and more state-of-the-art technology.
A top priority for our schools would be to have student support from teachers and counselors and our principal.
I believe that our priority for next year should be to increase academic rigor in classes.
Our top priority here at Morabe High School is improving the physical appearance of our school.
The goal is to provide more counselors so that students have better access to their services.
A top priority for our school is making every child or student feel like they're at home when they're here at Laguna Middle School.
The students were amazing. I was really impressed with their honesty, ability to be forthright about what they enjoyed at their schools and what recommendations they had for the future. It was a wonderful process, and I was glad to be part of it.
I was really impressed by what I heard from the secondary students that I was able to interview during the Student Senate. One thing that really surprised me, but it makes me very happy, is they spoke very strongly about wanting engagement and wanting rigorous classrooms. They want hard learning. They want to be challenged in their classes. And they also want to have relationships with their teachers. They want their teachers to know them, and they really appreciate those teachers who take the time to get to know them.
In the Superintendent Student Senate, I was so impressed by the students' ability to not only speak about the important things happening at their school, but to really have an analytical look. It was neat to see a variety of students representing a broad range of different student groups. A couple of the things that stood out to me from the discussion were that students really value an inclusive culture with everyone involved within their school, and they also really value relationships with teachers and staff.
I loved being a part of the Student Senate process, and I think mostly because I felt like the kids came empowered to tell us exactly what their thoughts were about their campuses, the things they'd like improved. I thought it was a wonderful opportunity.
So tonight, all three of us will walk you through the five focus areas, and you will see this input gathered from students as well as from our parents and community really weaved into our initial plan that we hope to share with you this evening. Mrs. Shields will begin walking you through the document, and we will start with focus areas 1 and 2. Good evening. You should all have a document, a very large document in front of you, and we also have documents over on the table for the public. We've developed an LCAP overview document designed to give you a balcony view of each of the goals that we're proposing. The overview includes, and this is where I'm going to need Mrs. McGrath's help, okay? The overview includes the focus, as you work your way down, the specific goal, stakeholder feedback that we've collected so far, both from students, staff, and community, expected outcomes, and finally, the actions or services plan to reach each goal. At our next board meeting, we will share with you the LCAP and LEA addendum, the actual documents, with very specific information regarding action, services, and budget items for your review. In the meantime, we hope this document will be a little bit more user-friendly than the 100-plus page LCAP comment. So just as a quick graphic, you read it down. So we have 5 proposed goals, and we'll talk about each one of them in order 1 through 5 from the top to the bottom. As you recall, in our current and prior LCAPs, we've developed one entire goal to increase academic achievement in mathematics and another one specifically about English language arts. In developing the 2017 to 2020 LCAP, as we call it, we've made a specific change in the design of our goals. Instead of curriculum-specific goals, Focus 1 is now about quality instruction and curriculum growth in all core academic areas. Specifically, our goal is that all students will achieve substantial academic gains through rigorous, relevant, and engaging instruction and curriculum. The stakeholder feedback, which you see in the green, and in a couple weeks when we present to you the actual LCAP document, that will be in green as well. We're going to try to make this a little bit simpler. That stakeholder feedback that led us to this goal was loud and clear from our students, as you heard bits and pieces tonight, about their desire to be engaged, challenged, and supported to succeed. Staff and parent feedback so far has emphasized valuing small class size, a focus on effective instruction, with teachers wanting opportunities to learn and collaborate around our curriculum and teaching.
Community stakeholders clearly told us that our mission critical is academic achievement. So our outcomes, which is the yellow section for Focus 1, will be measured by the California Assessment of Student Progress and Performance, or the CASP results, as well as our district common assessments, and our new English proficiency assessment for English learners, the LPAC, which we will be setting the baseline in the coming year, as well as completion of A through G curriculum within the CTE pathway. Our actions and services, which are that light violet color, we have six actions that I'm going to kind of go over what are the highlights from each of them. The first one being strengthening teachers' depth of knowledge of standards and curriculum in core academic areas. This will include professional development and assistance to our new teachers, as well as the continued development of teacher leaders in both math and English language arts, who will provide site-based professional development and support. We'll provide sites resources to purchase a variety of read-aloud and leveled text sets, which are aligned with our reading curriculum. We'll also provide professional development. We'll embed increasing our understanding of the ELD standards and best practices. The second action in Focus 1 is to strengthen classroom instructional strategies based on the Danielson Framework for Teaching. We will continue with a three-year plan to provide professional development for our administrative team so that they can better support teacher growth in the Danielson model. We are also providing opportunities for teachers to attend after-school grade-level collaboration sessions. Our part-time ELA TOSA will facilitate after-school learning opportunities for strengthening instructional strategies in our comprehensive literacy model. We're also planning site-based planning time for teacher teams to backwards map the upcoming year to include our units of instruction, assessments, and development of integrated units. In addition, we are planning a site-based professional development opportunity for both elementary and secondary teachers where they will spend time at their school site shadowing an English learner to observe firsthand what our students are experiencing in our classrooms. From here, the goal will be to strengthen student engagement and academic language. Our next action is to implement our Next Generation Science Standards Plan. Our science TOSA, Tristan Shorba, will be leading our elementary and secondary teachers toward fully implementing the NGSS standards with new curriculum in elementary, curriculum development in secondary, after-school professional development opportunities, piloting NGSS-aligned materials, and purchasing needed equipment and science mentor techs. Our next activity is to develop our social studies implementation plan. It is on the horizon, and we cannot ignore it any longer. So we are going to plan and begin to interpret the new framework. We are just beginning to study that history science framework, and we know there's a lot for us to learn. So next year will really be about developing the implementation timeline, as well as site and district leadership in this area. The next action step is to create and further develop effective CTE pathways. With funding primarily from grants, we'll continue to develop our CTE pathways facilitated by our own Liz Moore. A major focus for this coming year will be in articulating the college and career options related to CTE with our staff, industry partners, and students. And finally, in Focus 1, we will enhance and modernize our music programs. I hope she's still here. Good. We'll continue our multi-year plan to modernize both our elementary and secondary music programs. Okay. Now, if you go to the second column, Focus 2 is all about supporting our socioeconomically disadvantaged, English learners, foster homeless youth, and other students who may need targeted academic interventions. Specifically, Focus 2 states that all LCAP-identified student groups will achieve substantial academic gains through a multi-tiered system approach. Stakeholder feedback from our students included areas for improving how we offer and how we communicate about academic supports available at school sites, as well as a desire for online learning opportunities. Staff in the community emphasized the need for academic intervention and supports with strong feedback for continuing early literacy intervention, summer school, and transportation for after-school support offerings. We'll measure our outcomes on Focus 2, again through CASP, our District Common Assessment, inclusion opportunities for students, and parent feedback on our dual immersion school. Specifically, we'll be providing ongoing data for our socioeconomically disadvantaged students, English learners, and RFEP student populations to monitor their progress throughout the school year. Actions and services to meet this goal are centered around the strengthening of our district-wide multi-tiered system. Our EL intervention TOSA will coordinate current interventions, including English language development services. We'll continue to offer targeted summer school, AVID, online courses, intervention sections at all of our secondary sites, and professional development opportunities for our elementary teachers on classroom behavior interventions. We'll strengthen math supports, including personalized learning, through the Bridges Intervention Program, as well as online individualized math programs such as what is called spatial temporal, or you may have heard it called ST math, Wowzer math program, and Buzz math. We'll strengthen English language arts supports by providing leveled literacy intervention, or LLI, at 9 elementary schools with ongoing professional development for the LLI teachers. In secondary, we will expand our implementation of Read 180 reading and writing program. We will strengthen academic supports for English learners by providing EL specialists at elementary sites, as well as EL sections and aid allocations in secondary. We'll continue to develop our two-way immersion program at Pacheco Elementary, serving over 245 of our English learners, and provide personalized learning opportunities with Rosetta Stone for our beginning language learners. We'll strengthen support for special education students with an emphasis on inclusion through targeted professional development, workshops, and observation of model classrooms for special education teachers, staff, paraeducators, and select general education teachers. And finally, we'll strengthen our pre-K academic learning opportunities for English learners and socioeconomically disadvantaged students. We'll continue the Success for All preschool program, instructional aid support for our TK classes, professional development and collaboration opportunities for our preschool and TK teachers, and the Raising a Reader program, which provides parent education for supporting young children's literacy development, as well as books for students to take home and enjoy with their families. Mrs. Frost is going to be sharing Focus Area 3.
Good evening. In Focus Area 3, our goal is to enhance the culture of care throughout the district. As you know, LCAP feedback provided by both the parent community and our staff indicated that the culture of care throughout our campuses should be a priority. We hope to meet the social and emotional needs of our students by concentrating on 5 distinct categories. Our first category, to enhance the social emotional support, including the counseling model, to ensure support for families and students in need while increasing connections with community-based organizations, is our most expansive. In this area, we will continue counseling services at all of our schools and work to connect those services with therapeutic support provided at all of our schools through our contracts with agencies that provide our marriage and family therapists. Our family resource advocates are a critical component in the support we provide our students and families in need. We will maintain both positions, one focusing on families in SLO and one focusing on family support on the coast. The emotional health of our students is a critical focus in this area. Our counselors will prioritize suicide prevention, professional development for our secondary staffs, and will research curriculum regarding emotional health for implementation on our secondary campuses. Because we know that sensitive topics such as this require coordinated services, connections with local agencies, and input from parents, district personnel will ensure that community experts are tapped and that parents are involved. We hope to create communication opportunities for parents and staffs that provide education, research-based strategies, and practical supports to promote social-emotional wellness among our students. Finally, supporting our secondary schools in providing a drug-free, healthy atmosphere for all students is highlighted in this area. We will research and purchase effective curriculum for use with secondary students and partner with local community agencies in surveying needs of our secondary school communities as they relate to drug use among our students. In our second category, we will provide comprehensive supports for EL, SED, and foster homeless youth and other identified groups and their families. You remember that in Focus Area 2, Amy discussed the academic supports that will be provided to these groups. In this area, we will provide translation services, before and during school breakfast programs, and transportation for after school EL intervention and enrichment programs throughout our district. In our third category, we hope to strengthen early connection to English learner and socioeconomically disadvantaged families and the identification of students needing support prior to their enrollment in kindergarten. A kindergarten roundup is held at every elementary school in San Luis Coastal with support from our nursing staff, our speech and language pathologists, bilingual staff, our family advocates are present, and general education teachers. Our objective is to screen new students and provide referrals for students and families before the little ones make the critical transition to kindergarten. We also provide translation services in this category. In our fourth category, we will ensure safe and nurturing campuses through ongoing training, monitoring, and support of district-wide programs and processes. You'll see Web and Link Crew continuing this year. Our board may recall that last year our LCAP introduced funding for the first time for Web and Link Crew. These are two programs designed to foster connections between students on our secondary campuses and create a general sense of connectivity. Feedback from our Student Senate indicated that they would value both Web and Link at the beginning of the year, but missed a consistent implementation as the year progressed. We'll continue training of staff and implementation at secondary sites, sharing student feedback regarding the fidelity of the program with all administrators. But we don't want to stop with Web and Link in providing opportunities for our students to connect. Feedback offered during Student Senate days indicated that students want to feel a stronger connection to teachers as well. We are considering outside presenters working with our staff on the topic, and know that presentations are only effective with consistent follow-up on campus. While we're still defining our steps, we see it as a necessary topic to discuss. We'll also continue our focus on alternate means of correction and restorative justice at our secondary schools in this category. And then finally, in our last category under culture of care, we hope to engage and educate parents regarding San Luis Coastal academic, social, and emotional programs. This category emphasizes the importance of parent education and partnerships across topics important to the development of our students. We'll provide site-based parent education on literacy topics, an overview of grade-level math expectations at back-to-school nights in both English and Spanish, site-based STEAM and NGSS family nights, and parent literacy engagement activities at both elementary and secondary schools. All efforts will include additional and targeted outreach to our EL and SED families. As mentioned in our first category when discussing counseling supports, providing information and communication opportunities for our families in the area of social and emotional supports for our students is critical as well. Anxiety and depression, drug use and bullying are examples of topics that we can explore with our families. We have experts in our community that can be tapped to work with our staff and parents on this important topic, and we hope to move forward with this as well.
To move over to Focus 4, which is technology and innovation. Our desire is to keep a focus really on student needs and to do so in a modern and innovative way. So you'll see this goal is described as expanding technology and promoting innovation in order to prepare students for college and career. So when we looked at our stakeholder input, it really demonstrated to us that students desire an engaging opportunity that encouraged collaboration and technology to be used strategically as a learning tool, with personalized learning and to help meet students' individual needs. Staff and community noted that we should strengthen our use of technology and promote innovative ways to be able to reach all students in a personalized and strategic manner. What outcomes are we looking for in this area? As you probably remember, finding specific quantitative outcomes in technology and innovation was tricky for us before, but I really think that Bright Bites has allowed us the opportunity to kind of quantify some of these tech and innovative goals. We've had not had clarity around this in the past, so I do think we have much stronger outcomes in this area. We'll look at student frequency related to digital citizenship, increasing online collaborative opportunities, and even though our data currently shows that 95% of our students have access to home devices, it still means that 5% do not. So we want to continue to find strategic ways to meet those individual needs at school sites and address this issue for the 5% that do not. Finally, we also want to measure the time and number of books read through Mion and increase this over time. We'll continue to build our site tech leaders and model best practices. We'll utilize our data to modernize learning opportunities and be even more specific with our professional development. We'll look to continue to implement online and personalized learning opportunities, as well as continuing to develop our STEAM programs. So finally, focus five. This final focus area is our data culture. We will strengthen our use of data to measure and improve our academic achievement. Stakeholder feedback noted a desire to use our data resources and strengthen the use in order to improve achievement. So we will work on increasing the number of students satisfying UCCSU requirements, as well as increasing AP enrollments and AP pass rates. Elementary students will continue to utilize a standards-based report card, and we will use Bright Bites to measure teacher use of digital and online assessments. Our final action will be to better utilize student data to monitor progress. When we look at the goal that we're trying to achieve, we need to check along the way and do a better job of having valuable discussions so that teachers can learn from one another and use that data as part of their instruction. So, that's it. This is the short document of the 100-page LCAP that will be headed your way. As you heard previously, we're still gathering data. Happy to hear your input as well to help us continue to refine this document and focus it. We're pleased with the progress we've made so far. Welcome your comments and questions.
It's a very well-organized document, too, and very easy to follow. Thank you very much for that, Mrs. McGrath. So Mrs. Sheffer, I'd like to go on first.
This is great information. I appreciate it. I'm very impressed with and look forward to its continuation in coming years. It's a wonderful opportunity for students to become involved in the way the district works as a whole and hear from one another. So I have sort of a bottom line question. Excuse me for just cutting to the chase here, but does all of this work within our existing budget? There are no dollars attached to any of these items, and I understand and appreciate the feedback, but we're operating with not an endless amount of money. In fact, we're operating with a decreasing amount of money. So that's my bottom line question here.
So I think the key aspect, and Kim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, so this LCAP is the beginning of a three-year cycle. So the focus areas will kind of be the same focus areas that we'll keep for 3 years. Now what's underneath each focus area, again, each year you look at it, you adapt, you check it, right? So what happens within each focus area could adapt and change over the course of the next 3 years as this plan goes. So, but after working with Amy, we've broke out everything, we've looked at all the budgets, so this reflects actually less in terms of overall cost, PD, all those budget cuts that we made in February as a board are all put in. So I'm waiting for Julie to kind of give me the follow, you know, kind of the final, hey, where does this kind of fit within our budget projections, where are we at? First blush right now looks like that we're in pretty good shape. So that is something that, again, I think we need to hear your feedback. What do you think? Are we headed in the right direction? And then we'll be coming back to the board with the LCAP and budget at the next meeting.
Okay. And to follow up just a little bit, I would say looking at this, some of these things, it appears to me, are things we actually are currently doing.
Oh, many of them.
So it's
absolutely
more following along on that same path,
yes,
perhaps tweaking things a little bit, and those, to my understanding, would not have large budgetary ramifications. But some of the other things, it appears may. So it looks like some of these are more keep up the good work, and others are we want to see this in addition to everything you're already doing. So I'll look forward to more information with some of those things. So
the actual LCAD document will break it out by amounts,
okay,
by totals. So this tonight was just kind of a preview for the board, you know, let you see kind of where we're at, where we're headed. But we've been working kind of hand in hand in terms of the budget, the cost of everything. And in particular this year, I think we've gotten more specific.
Okay.
So by person, by position, by cost. Broke all that down for Mrs. Shields as she's created it, so to make sure that we're all on the same page, where we're at, how much we have to spend in terms of the LCAP, and it's been super important for us to really be more precise about our budget, especially as we move forward.
Well, I think it's important to that precision is important to the board as well as we
Absolutely.
Seek to fulfill our duties. Thank you.
Sure. Mr. Quisenberry.
I have a couple of questions and perhaps a comment or two. Under academic support, you were talking, I have a question about online support, you know, was mentioned in screencasts. And currently, what are we doing for families and specifically parents to kind of understand better what is available to students so that they can kind of understand whether their student is doing something productive online or not productive, or, you know, if they claim it's school-related, that they would understand that it's school-related and thus important. So that's a question. Mm-hmm. Do we have an answer for that, or is that?
Somewhat. I would say some of that is within Focus 4, within technology and innovation as well, and as well as the parent education portion. So digital citizenship, I think, is kind of the larger umbrella I think of when I think of what you're talking about.
Well, no, actually I'm talking about digital proficiency. I mean, the fact that a parent may need to know more about what the student is actually accessing and doing and understand that, you know, this is a valuable activity. The students could be sharing comments on one another's essays or collaborating on something. And I'm not, maybe it's just me, maybe I'm just too old to, I'm not sure that parents can appreciate that and participate in that in some way.
It's a great point. So what I hear you saying is maybe the parent education around the value of collaborative tools and using technology in a productive manner.
Great. Yes.
Great.
The other one was on technology and innovation. You were talking about the access to devices or possession of devices, and you were wanting to increase that by 2%. I think that's – maybe I'm being unrealistic. I think that's too modest. I really think that it's as we move into this use of technology, it's almost absolutely essential that we get as near to 100% as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a comment.
Great.
Thank you.
Mr. Bookman.
Thank you. I had a number of questions that Kimberly and I, that I sent to Kimberly prior, and one of those was, and we've been in this LCAP mode for a while now, and I think it might be helpful just if you could just mention maybe one program, because I think we involve all these folks in giving input, and I'm not sure they always find out the effect of that. So maybe just an example of one program that came out of this LCAP over the years, or one or two.
Based on feedback, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Right.
Just, yeah.
So, for example, one that sticks out in my mind is DLAC's input about the importance of summer school and transportation. That stands out to me as a pretty directly related concern, comment, and directly related to what you would see encompassed in the LCAP.
Okay. The need for the science TOSA, Tristan, as we went around to sites, right, was a huge, huge push by our elementary teachers to have that assistance.
And so I think that just speaks volumes. So under Focus 3 in the culture of care, it's my understanding that the attendance rate in the district is in the 90s. It's mm-hmm. 90% positive attendance.
High 90s. Mm-hmm.
High 90s. Somebody have mm-hmm. a better number. So do I hear a better number? think it's way up there. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at the goal here to increase it by 2%, this is a mm-hmm. huge shift. I mean, that would be just an amazing thing. So I really want to compliment that.
And I believe the goal, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Frost, could be about chronic absenteeism. And so that...
Okay.
Yeah, so chronic absenteeism would be students that, you know, have a habitual problem with attendance, and those are students that we want to hone in on, mm-hmm. Not necessarily our general population that's here 95-96% of the time.
Right.
But if 13% of our students are continually... have, you know, extreme absence rates, then we know that that's impacting their learning. So that's what we want to be specific about and target.
So targeting in, I mean, 96%, 97%, those that may be left are those with the chronic issues and need mm-hmm. more attention. So
exactly.
I just have to applaud that. And I think that, you know, people that are watching need to understand that we don't have an attendance problem. We're going to focus on what's left because we've, I mean, 97% is just amazing. I also asked you, Kimberly, about the A to G people, the students that are completing A to G, and to break, just give me some numbers on the SED completion rate. And I was kind of, happy about those results. If you could just talk about that and maybe programs that have helped out.
Absolutely. So socioeconomically disadvantaged students, if I can remember the numbers off the top of my head, I think Morro Bay, we had 59% of socioeconomically disadvantaged students completing high school with their A to G requirements, and at Slo High, I believe it was 68%. So it's remarkably high. Of course, there's room for improvement, and that's why you see it as a goal. The great part about having high numbers is then, again, it allows us to target individual students and to really attach names to that and for us to have discussions about what's getting in Johnny's way and what can we do to help make that even better. Because obviously our goal is just to keep that door open for students if they want it to be open. So Cuesta and other things are a great opportunity for many students, but just to keep the door open when we can. Plus it provides a rigorous curriculum for students, which we all value.
And can you mentioned to me the APEX program.
Right. I do think it is a big shift when we... Our previous program was not an A to G curriculum. So now that we're using an A to G curriculum for credit recovery, students are able to, when they recover a grade, still hold on to their A to G status, right? That's a big thing. So if I fail chemistry, I can now recover it and still keep my A to G status. Also, we allow it for grade recovery, right? So if I get a D, I'm still getting chemistry credit in high school, but I'm not getting A to G credit, right? That would knock me out of A to G status. So this program can also be used to recover the grade of D if you'd like to try to hold on to your A to G status. So having a program that is now an opportunity so that you can have an A to G option is a great option for us.
Okay, so and so my comment is I have to say I was hesitant of the value of LCAP. I mean, it's one more report for staff to do, and it's more work, and it's really redundant quite often. But it seems that the involvement of the community, and there was five specific groups, but this district's gone way beyond that, and it seems that involvement is really, really paying off, and I just think the LCAP's great at this point. So thank you.
And I have to say I applaud our site principals and staff members because they've really aligned it to their LEA plan and to the SPSA at the site level, which makes this valuable work, right? If this was just work to then turn in, then that's a lot of work for limited purpose, right? But since it is related to our LEA plan, that is what we refer back to. That's how we check, how are we doing? Are we making progress? How are these goals going? How do we need to refocus? And sites have done a fabulous job of aligning it to their site plans so that they start with this as the foundation, and then they add what specific things at their school are they going to add to it, because, of course, every school is slightly different. So that adds a lot of strength and purpose to it so that this really becomes a living, purposeful document. Thank you.
And Mr. Unger.
So I just would like to follow up with, start with the LEA plan, and just for the record remind people that the LEA plan is also developed through the school site councils, and so that provides another method of input. There are a couple of questions I have. First, you talked about the credit recovery program, the online credit recovery program. I know that LAUSD has used an online credit recovery program, but one of the concerns about it was that it wasn't very rigorous and that it allowed students to kind of skate through by taking a quick multiple choice test the requirements. How do we know that what this online program is actually rigorous enough to guarantee our students, or at least to hopefully guarantee our students, when they get admitted to CSU or UC, that they'll be able to be successful there?
Yeah, great question. So our previous program, we had those exact concerns, that you could finish that whole year course in 2 to 3 weeks and it wasn't giving you A-G credit, and we didn't want to put our name behind that, right? This these course options, first of all, since they're A-G approved, they had to meet a certain level of rigor to get that A-G approval, and then you will find from student, teacher, parent experiences, it holds lots of rigor. So we looked at a variety of options and looked at the strength of each one. And when we selected this program, was this last year, I think I talked to you about APEX, or is it 2 years ago, maybe one or two? That was one of the factors that we looked at. It's, if we're going to put our name behind this, how do we know that it is a similar enough to the components of instruction and curriculum that we value within our district? And so what we have found is that it does provide a rigorous but yet fair opportunity for students to be able to recover. There are two components of it, and one is interesting. When you go to recover grades, you can test out of the things that you understand, but it still is only going to take you down to a certain level. There's still a solid amount that you have to pass in order to receive that credit. So we are pleased with its rigor.
And so when you say A to G, this has been approved by CSU and UC, correct?
It has been submitted, true.
And I'm hoping that we're using the same level of rigor to assure the quality for other virtual classroom modules that we might have, online learning and things like that, are we not?
Currently, this is the one standard program that we're using. Is this one's called APEX, is the one that we're using. There are there's a couple of hybrid classes at the high school where the teacher has helped develop, but otherwise this is the standard online program that we're using for high school credit.
I guess my question really was more about, as we know that actually, for example, virtual charter schools are considered among the worst in the country, and so I want to just make sure that the rigor of our virtual classes or our online classes is high quality, not just for APEX, but for anything else that we might be offering our students.
Right. I hear you. It's a great point. A second step that we've taken that I would say I would probably venture to bet most districts have not done, is before we offer that course, we give it to a current teacher that's teaching that course and have them evaluate it for how closely does it match standards, how closely does it match curriculums and what we value as good instruction. And we've actually a couple of times not offered a course because the teacher said, I don't know, it has a couple of holes and I'm not completely comfortable with it. We've taken that extra step to really ensure, even beyond the fact that it's been submitted and received approval, we still take another internal step to ensure that we can put our name behind that and feel proud of it.
Great. Talking about chronic absenteeism, just a reminder to everybody that a student that's absent twice a month is absent for 10% of their school year, and that chronic absences will be one of the state accountability measures, and it really is an important measure of school site health and health of the community. And I just think I want to reinforce how important that is as a way of actually one gauge of student mental health. Another question I had, and this may be a question for Mrs. Frost, in regarding the inclusion goal under focus area number 2, so what this talks about is inclusion, district-generated inside regular classroom data will indicate a 2% increase in the time special ed students spend in the general education classroom. That's a laudable goal. My question, though, is what does that 2% give us in terms of student achievement? It's kind of like, my concern about lowering suspension rates, which is a great and laudable goal, but I can easily lower suspension rates by just not suspending kids. So my question is, what are the students getting for this additional 2%, and how are we going to make sure they get it?
Well,
I think the students, and this is research-based, and this is required by the federal government as well as the state government, that our students who even have IEPs will be in a more rigorous opportunity around their typical peers in a general education classroom. And the thinking is that with a general education teacher, even working with students with needs, maybe accommodating or modifying the curriculum, those students will move forward more quickly and more appropriately than separated in a special education classroom. Now, there are times that we have to separate students in special education classrooms. There's no doubt about it. But when we have the opportunity to have them educated side by side in a general education classroom, we think those kids are going to move forward more quickly. Now, in our district, we've done a couple of things to try to increase the time that our special education kids are in general education classrooms. And I think I've told you over the last couple of years that we do have state numbers, state targets that have to be met. We are required to try to approach 49.2% of our children with IEPs in 80% or more general education. So that's the target we've been going for. The last several years we have not met that target. So we put things in place to try to increase the number in general ed, understanding that we think that for many of them it's better for them. So you see in there that I say in district data, so we keep our own district data to see how many children are in general education or what their total percentage is, as well as getting the data from the state. The state data is about a year and a half in arrears. So that's why we keep our own data. That's part of the reason why we do it. The reasons that we are, I think, increasing that is because we're looking more closely at the data. I have leadership groups on campus that are doing so. We've talked with our special education groups at length about the benefits of including kids, special education kids in general education classrooms. And then we've looked at and implemented inclusion practices in our schools. I have a number of elementary resource specialists who are pushing into general education classrooms instead of pulling the children out. And we also have co-taught classes at our secondary schools. So all four of our comprehensive secondary schools have co-taught classes where special education children who were formerly in resource classes are in general education classes, and a resource specialist and a general education teacher is teaching side by side. And I can give you some numbers. At Los Osos Middle School, I have 6 co-taught classes. I have math classes and English language arts and social studies. At Morro Bay High School, I have 5 co-taught classes. Laguna Middle School has 2 co-taught classes, and they're increasing that next year. And SLO High School also has 2 co-taught classes. And I do spend time with these teachers. How is this going? I actually did professional development at the beginning of the year where I brought the teams in together so that they could plan. The people with experience related to the rest of the group, that the partnership is beneficial for everybody in the classroom. So my special education children are getting support from 2 teachers, but my general education kids who struggle also with some of the curriculum are getting support from the partnership and from the skills of the special educator in that classroom. I would also say that we're really thoughtful about the children who go into co-taught classrooms, the children at the elementary level who get the push-in support instead of the pull-out support. We're really thoughtfully considering who among our children with IEPs can benefit from that model.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you again for this very well-organized information. Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on this, Ms. Bravante?
I just have a few comments and maybe questions. First of all, I'd like to say that I am so pleased to be a part of this district. It's so nice to see the breadth and depth of our goals here at the LCAP, and as a parent of an SLC USD student as well. Number one, with the Student Senate, I'm wondering if you would consider inviting the elementary students to be a part of that. I think that is missing. It'll be great to have 1 or 2 fifth graders on the coast and 6th graders in town to be a part of that next year. Number two, with focus area number one, of course, the music. And again, although I've taught at the secondary level, since I'm elementary teacher now, that's my focus, that's my bias, and so these points are geared toward that end. I'm hoping that this enhanced and modernized music programs is elementary as well, not just secondary, and to remind all of you that we cut our primary music 5 or 6 years ago, and that's still sorely missed, and that if that were ever to be reinstated again, not in the way that it was, two classes at a time, that wasn't working, but single classes, it would really meet more than focus area one. It would meet focus area two and three. As we know, studies say music instruction really helps with language acquiring language development, thank you, and of course, culture of care. And then the last thing I wanted to say was, as a parent and teacher, I'm concerned under Focus Area 5 about the amount of hours my child and other students are being tested, both the standardized state tests and district tests, and the report card. Although it's really wonderful, the standards-based report card, there are so many grades that the teachers have to compute for each child. I think there's like 30 or something different grades, and all of the assessments have to go into those grades, and the time that is lost in planning instruction. Of course, assessment informs instruction, but I really think that if we pulled back some of that, our kids really could benefit from that. Thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Unger, did you have something else you wanted to say?
No, I was just...
Okay. Hello, Mrs. Neuhauser.
Judy Neuhauser, Los Osos. I have a couple questions. I was interested to find that Rosetta Stone has showed back up again, and I'm just curious if that... It was talked about with a dual immersion program, but when I taught third grade, I had two students 1 year who spoke no English. One was Tagalog, and the other was Chinese. and it took us, I want to say, 6 weeks to get any kind of Rosetta Stone available. So I'm hoping that's available to all the schools. So that was one question. I have another question about data disaggregation, and I'm really hoping that all of the CAASP tests will be disaggregated and presented so that we can find that information, so that we know how our SED students are doing and how our EL students are doing on that, that it's not just year to year, but we can actually look at the different students and find out is what we're doing functioning for all of our subgroups. So I don't know if that's a question or a comment. I also want to talk a little bit about other technologies. When I think of technology, I think of things like a microphone. I think of cars. I think of lighting. I think of my glasses and the lenses. And when I look at this, this technology seems to be digital technology. It doesn't say that, but when it talks about technology, it's talking digital technology. And I think that other kinds of technology are extremely important. Understanding how to build things and how to put things together is something that, as an engineering student, you absolutely have to be able to do. So I'm really hoping that starting in early elementary, there's a lot of hands-on kinds of building and understanding how things go together, that continues at the middle school. I understand that shop is not taught anymore, at least at Los Osos Middle School, and cooking is not taught. Both of those are hands-on kinds of technology. Cooking is chemistry. And so I'm wondering how then they're able to innovate with that kind of technology if they don't have instruction in it. I know there's a makerspace, and the teachers go in and teach kind of as needed, but I'm a little curious as to how that actually works out. So I guess that's most of my questions. I just hope to see all of the data disaggregated into subgroups. That's a huge one for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 9.02, approval of annual declaration for need for fully qualified educators. Ms. Newland, you're up again.
So this is a document that goes before to the Commission on Teacher Credentialing every year. And it's a document that basically says that we promise as a district that we will do a diligent search for fully credentialed teachers. And so a year in advance, so for this is for next year. You have any problems with that?
I set my own timer, and it's going crazy, and I can't shut the stupid thing off.
How about Scott?
I'm pushing it down.
We need somebody from technology.
There we go. Technology.
Exactly. So anyway, this is a declaration of need for fully qualified educators. This is a form that goes to the Commission on Teacher Credentialing, and it basically assures them that we promise we will do a diligent search when we are looking for staff members. However, there are some areas, we are very lucky as a district, by the way, because of Cal Poly, we have, and because of our high salary schedules, and because we have an excellent working conditions and a great district, we have very few problems in recruiting staff. Although I know there's a teacher shortage right now, I know a lot of other districts are scrambling. There are still areas that, regardless of whether we have a great applicant pool, we still struggle. And that's what this document is about. It's saying, basically, first, we promise we will try to find fully qualified educators. But in case we can't, these are the areas that we feel we might end up short. And we have to guess in advance so that when we go and file with the Commission on Teacher Credentialing any kind of an emergency permit, we've already told them in advance that we think we're going to need it. If we didn't put it in here and then we needed it, we'd have to refile this form. So we do this every year. So let's look at the areas in which we think we are not going to be able to find people. The first area is a CLAD. Everybody in our district has a CLAD, and all teaching credentials now include the CLAD. But this is for people coming from out of state, because out of state people rarely have a CLAD, because it's not required in other states. So last year we put 10 here, and we only used one. So this year we lowered it to 5. The second area is bilingual authorizations, and that's always an area for struggle, and particularly because we have Pacheco, we are looking for BCLAD authorizations. And sometimes we have great bilingual applicants, but they haven't passed the BCLAD, so we need emergency BCLADs until they can pass that. So that's the second area. The limited assignment permits, we would only be looking at limited assignment permits there that are listed there are special ed and single subject. Traditionally, the single subjects would be like in physics and chemistry and some. Those are really the only areas, I think, that we've had fewer applicants or struggled to find applicants. Even though it says 4, 2 for single subject and 2 for special ed, this is what we had last year as well. We only ended up using 1 in the area of special education. And it was for somebody who had a full special ed credential, but they needed an authorization in a specialized area like orthopedically impaired or one of the other authorizations that exist in special education. So that's, and then as far as internship program, you can see that at first you have to look for a qualified individual first. You can't go to an intern first. And I get that question a lot. You know, somebody who will be a teacher or will be a coach, for example, and they're great with kids and, you know, people really love them, but they haven't entered into a teacher education program. And this is certifying that we will first do a diligent search and look for people with credentials before we will go to those fantastic people that are not qualified. And so we do have we do have internship agreements. We don't have our own because we're really not large enough to have one, and Cal Poly doesn't have one. So we can't use Cal Poly as a somewhere where we get our interns. So we use Brandman, National. Those are the two that we're using at the moment. Questions about this document?
Mr. Buckman.
So, again, Kristen, I appreciate your helping me today and sending me some documents. And you just used a term that I've never heard before in this district, which is we struggle to find applicants. And in the single subjects in physics, and I understand that. So we know we have a major teacher shortage in the state of California. Those are subjects that are predominant in there. Are we going to be looking at a more pointed outreach And not just relying on our location?
Well, we have been this last year. We signed up for some services that put things in all the universities. I think I had sent that to you. Beth found this place that posts on 100 university sites, and that's been really helpful to us. We have a hard-to-fill agency that we have contacted. You know, we have different agreements with special education agencies that provide speech and language if we can't find someone. You know, we are lucky to have applicants, but, like, for example, here's a good example. We had a science opening at the middle school. And although science is fairly easy to fill at the middle school because it can take any credential, and so it's easier to find biology credentials, we thought this was an opportunity to see if we could find physics or chemistry, because you don't get those opportunities very often. So we flew a secondary physical science position, and we interviewed 5 people. All of them wanted high school, because they didn't really want the middle school position. And by the time we interviewed 5, we watched 3 people. We invited 3 of them back for lessons. And by the day of the lesson, there was only 1 left because they'd all gotten other jobs. They just get, it's fast, right? So I guess that would be where we would struggle. So instead, we're going to refly that position for middle school science, which is what we really needed. We just thought that we'd take an opportunity to see if we could find a hard-to-fill position, and it didn't work in our favor.
So just as a quick follow-up, so my understanding is there's districts in the state now that are offering fairly sizable bonuses. I think I heard $10,000 bonus for if you were, mm-hmm. I think it's just a high school math teacher. So it doesn't sound like we're moving down that kind of
road. We have a high school math on the consent agenda tonight,
right.
And certificated that we are able to hire.
And I was going to comment that later.
Yeah,
but yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
So we've been lucky. I mean, again, it's the salary schedule, it's the close proximity to Cal Poly, it's the great working conditions in the district, it's small class sizes, all the things that we've talked about and why it's great to be in San Luis Coastal. So we're really lucky in the fact that we aren't experiencing what other local districts are experiencing, except for in hard-to-fill positions, and we've always experienced that in those hard-to-fill positions. There simply aren't enough candidates in that pool.
Mrs. Schiffer?
I was just going to indicate if there's no further discussion, I would move to approve the annual declaration of need for fully qualified educators.
Second.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, we have a motion by Mrs. Schiffer and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. That passes.
Thank you.
7-0. Now moving on to item number 9.03, Measure D, approved notice of completion.
Exciting times. Notice of completion, that's a good thing, right, that we've completed a project. So we have our first Measure D project completed, the tennis courts at both Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School. Mr. Holcomb's been working really close with Steve Stewart in terms of getting this final change order, which is kind of next agenda item for the board. Courts look beautiful. Tons of positive, you know, input from the community, from the kids. Just, again, just the pride of having a nice facility. So for the tennis courts, those types of things. Now, I would like Anthony to come up, Mr. Plaza to come up, and just talk a little bit about why we do a notice of completion, since this is the first one, and then we won't have to explain it for the next 5 years, 6 years as we go through these.
Thank you.
Okay. So as we are a government agency, we don't have... contractors don't have lien rights against our property. In other words, if a contractor or a subcontractor doesn't get paid, that person can't file a lien against our property because it's government property. They can't take it or attach any tax or any liens against that property for collection of that payment. So what the law has come up with is what they call preliminary notices and then stop notices. So what preliminary notices are is when a project is awarded to a contractor, any and all subcontractors and suppliers have a period from the time that bid is awarded to file a notice, a preliminary notice at the county of San Luis Obispo in this case, notifying the county and notifying us that they're on the project and that they'll be providing services and or materials to the project. As the project moves along, if they're not getting paid in a timely manner, if they're not getting paid correctly or the amounts that they feel they're due, they'll then file a stop notice with us and at the county so that we know that something's going on, and then we can investigate that, figure out if they are or not getting paid, and then if so, we can withhold payment from the contractor and pay that sub or that supplier directly. Now, as a project gets on in age and it gets towards the end, that money that we have in our hands to be able to release to a sub or a supplier directly gets smaller and smaller as we're paying the contractor over time. So this is kind of the final check that there are no stop notices out there or that a subcontractor hasn't been paid. So that we filed this notice of completion at the county. That notifies any and all subs and suppliers that filed a preliminary notice on the project that we're getting ready to make our final payment. If you have any issues, you better bring it up now, otherwise forever hold your peace, so to speak. So this doesn't, you know, if a sub or a material supplier didn't file a preliminary notice, they won't get notified of this, and they've kind of given up their rights on that stop notice and kind of takes away that ability for us to be able to resolve that issue for them. So that said, you got that one time for the next 5 years, right?
We've got
okay,
that.
Very
Thank
good. So, yeah, so we're asking for approval of this notice to completion on the tennis courts projects, both at Morro Bay and Slohi, because it was one contract. And then tomorrow morning, Kelly and I will go down to the county and we'll file this notice and get it recorded so that everyone gets notified.
So I'd like to move acceptance of the completion.
I'll second it.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, there's a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes 7-0. Thank you. And now we're moving on to Measure D.
So this is actually the final change order for the tennis courts. While the Morro Bay project went relatively smoothly and forward, we did have issues at San Luis Obispo High School. So, yes.
Is that on? I have to recuse myself from this item. So how long do we expect this to take? You know, maybe do a couple of errands, come back.
Walk around the block.
Go ahead.
So this is the final change order for the tennis courts. Again, while Morro Bay High went pretty smoothly, we did run into issues at San Luis Obispo High School. Whether it was caverns underneath the current tennis courts that were there from waterways, or actually having to physically, after the job was kind of designed, go forward, that we actually had to move a portion of the tennis courts to fit the current light standard there, which thus caused us to have issues with the softball shed, those type, you know, lots of things kind of unfolded because of the issues that we faced there. So, again, Mr. Stewart was on the project. Mr. Holcomb kind of worked closely with him throughout the project to kind of whittle our way down to kind of the least amount that we felt was, you know, basically fair, that we would have a fair, responsible payment to Burke Construction for the work that they did, and again, to deal with some of those unforeseen issues. So we hope that with our new delivery methods that some of these issues and problems will be solved prior to going to bid and signing the contract and setting up a price for these projects. So we are excited about the future. So that said, if there's any questions in particular about the change order itself, Mr. Holcomb's here. He can answer those for you as he dealt closely with Mr. Stewart on that problem. Otherwise, we're asking the board to move approval of this final change order for construction of the tennis courts.
I would just like to comment, though, that for all the difficulty and grief that you may have gone through to make this happen, it is a tremendous hub of activity in the community. I drive by it several times a day and see many people enjoying those beautiful tennis courts. And I've only played tennis there once, but it really is a wonderful addition to our community. So thank you for all your hard work in making that happen. And Ms. Roger.
Thank you. I'll move approval of change order number 4.
Sorry. Second. That's a motion by Ms. Roger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer.
And the reason for my abstention is because my wife is employed by the architectural firm.
Thank you. Anyone from the public who would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's 6 in favor and 1 abstention. We're moving on to item number 9.05.
So yeah, the board authorized us to go out to formal bid for a painting project at three of our elementary sites, and actually two elementary sites and one of our unused camp. Well, it's not unused, but it's one of our other campuses at Sunnyside. So in need of exterior painting. So the bids came back. The first bidder actually backed out of the bid when discussed to go through the project. But we have met with the Pacific Contractors Group, talked to them, moved forward. And so we are asking the board, and we feel good about kind of moving forward, and so that the second lowest bid, which is the Pacific Contractors Group, that we're asking the board to move approval of us awarding that contract.
Okay, is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, Ms. Roger?
I'll move approval of, what are we calling it, bid number 288.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Ms. Roger and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
That's a passes 7-0 and 9.06.
Yeah, and the last one is just kind of a notification for the board, and we probably will do these more Friday updates and bring the actual contract resolution. So we actually have to pass a resolution. The board has to pass a resolution for our lease-back agreements with contractors. So the best value moving that forward. But we just wanted to let the board know, kind of notify you that RSH Construction was the, after going through the pricing and going through the best value criteria, was the firm that basically have the best overall score, which would provide the best value. So we will be coming back to the board. I believe it should be the May 16th meeting to bring that actual contract and have the board pass the resolution at that time. So this is just an update for you.
So no action
tonight.
Mr. Miller?
So you're saying that each time lease back comes up, we need to do the resolution?
So when we do the contract, we'll actually have the board approve the resolution as well with that. So
okay. This
is kind of an extra step. I don't think that's necessary for us to, you know, let the board know. I can let you know through other means. But we'll bring the actual contract. We'll still ask the board if we're going to issue an RFP. We still have to get that approval beforehand as we move forward. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. We move on to the action consent agenda. If you would like to have any of these items pulled, please say so. Item point 10.01, approval of certificated, that's pulled. And item number 10.02, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases. Item 10.03, approval of warrants and payroll. That was Mr. Millar. Item 10.04, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item 10.05, acceptance of donations. Item 10.06, approval of foreign exchange organizations. And item 10.07, action on claim against the district. Okay. Is anyone looking for a motion? Ms. Sheffer?
You'll have to tell me if I did these right. I would move approval of 10.02, 10.04, 05, 06, and 07.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Ms. Sheffer and seconded by Mr. Millar to accept items number 10.04, 5, 6, and 7. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item 10.01, Mr. Unger.
Yes, and one of the things that we get to do at this time of year is congratulate some of the retirees, and there's a couple of retirees I'd like to congratulate and just thank them for their service. One is Susan Pacheco at Hawthorne School, and the second is somebody I've known for quite a long time, Priscilla Strickland, a science teacher at Los Osos Middle School.
And I'll add Nancy Bedrigian to that list.
Nancy.
Oh, sorry. Okay. We didn't.
No.
And Mr. Quisenberry also joins in that. And so item number 10.0.
I'll move approval of item number 10.01.
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry on item point 10.01. All in favor?
Aye.
That passes 7-0. And Mr. Millar, 10.02.
Pulled for the purposes of recusal for the same reason my wife is employed by the architectural firm.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Move approval of item 10.02.
That's a motion by Mr. Unger, seconded by Ms. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes 6-0 with one abstention. That was 10.02. Oh, you said 10.03.
Correct.
Oh, 3 is the one you're abstaining from. Is that right, Mr. Millar? Ah, okay.
So, but we didn't have nobody. Did we? Did you? Okay. So it was just 10.0.
Yeah. 10 points.
Okay. I'm sorry. I thought 10.02 was one of the lists. I would move approval of item number 10.03.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry for 10.03. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, and that's 0-6 with one abstention. Okay, then we're moving on. Reports by board members.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yes, Mr. Buckman.
Okay, so... I just want to point out that this is the end of the year, and there's just a ton of activities going on. And while I truly appreciate the ability to visit, I think one of the important things to me is when I report out, it also highlights what's going on within the district and what's going on at the school sites. So I apologize, but there's a lot of stuff going on right now in the year. First, I'd like to say that I'll be up in Sacramento the day after the governor's final budget, after the May revise. And be up there with a group, and we will be going in and visiting our legislators and making sure that the voice of public education is heard on the May revise activities. No, I was announcing that it was happening.
Okay.
I think that may have been Chris. Chris goes everywhere.
Sorry, Mr. Breckman. Go continue.
I think that went over my head, Walter. So I did get to visit Slo High and was particularly pleased when I saw the tiny theater that is existing, reminded of that, and that will be the Measure D money will be replacing it. I was at a dinner the other night featuring our local legislators and congressmen, and it was announced at that dinner that Senator Bill Monning was unable to attend, but that he chose 2 San Luis High School students to attend in his stead. So I'd just like to do a shout out to Oliver Hicks and Rudik Chinglot. They represented him well. This, I think that was the entire board, but the majority of the board was at the WASC review for Moore Bay High School, and that was great to see that happening. And there was most of us were all at Rick Robinette's retirement, and that was just seeing old faces and seeing everybody that loved him. But lastly, I joined Kimberly Grath at Hawthorne's open house, and I took my grandson, which was a whole new twist because now I know everything about every playground at Hawthorne besides getting to visit the classrooms. So that's my report.
Thank you. And Mr. Quisenberry.
Thank you. Well, I had a unique opportunity a week ago Friday. The Del Mar TK had a field trip to the Morro Bay Library, and the students at the TK classes are part of the Raising a Reader program. So it was tied to that. It was also some students' first, one little boy informing that his first trip to the library. And so I thought that was really that was touching to me. I thought that was great that the kid had. And so in anticipation, teacher Patricia, that is Patricia Nolan, made sure that the kids got their library cards who didn't have them. So kids will receive that. They received a certificate from the Reading Recovery Program, plus a little satchel to carry their books around in, and cake was had by all, and we got to go in the Morro Bay trolley, which was so exciting. I was excited. I sat in the back where there's no windows, and you're the fresh air, the sea breeze, and kids waving at everybody, and I think I was just about as excited as they were. So one of the things they did is they presented the county schools with a certificate, I would call it, and they also gave one to San Luis Coastal, both for supporting that Raising and Reading program, and I just can't begin to tell you how wonderful that is. In fact, the students received as part of their certificate in their satchel a book called The Night Before Kindergarten. So, you know, it was wonderful, a great turnout of parents, and they gave me this to share with Dr. Prater. And I'm going to come by his office in a week and make sure that it's hanging prominently on his wall. And we've already established that who my grandson is in here. But what's amazing to me is the teacher said something that I can fully agree with. Getting those kids to write their names that small, I think, was a major accomplishment. Not just they write their names, but they could actually write them that small. And they've done a wonderful job. It's very legible. And I'd like to present this to Dr. Prater.
Cool. We're having a selfie moment here. Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry. Mr. Unger.
Well, last week, Mr. Buckman and I actually went to the Big Brothers, Big Sisters supporters reception, and it's always a wonderful event, and there were probably close to 100 people there, supporters of Big Brothers and Sisters. There's always a touching speech from typically a little and a big. And I wanted to just share for a minute that our district has connections. Several of our schools have connections through Big Brothers and Big Sisters. For example, Del Mar and Morro Bay High School have a connection. So Morro Bay High School provides the bigs, and Del Mar has some of the littles, and it's really a wonderful program. And I'm not sure. I believe San Luis High does too, but I don't know for sure. We're shaking our heads over here.
Yeah,
okay. I was able to go visit C.L. Smith School last Thursday, and I just wanted to give a big shout-out to the teachers that allowed me in their classrooms, Mrs. Emmerich, Mrs. Emerson, Mr. Geary, Mrs. Green, Mr. Garner, Mrs. Bauer, and Mrs. Richardson. It's always so much fun to go into classrooms and see what's going on there. And then last but not least, last Wednesday I got to spend about an hour and a half in Mrs. Tricano's class at Sensheimer School, where she was doing one of the FOSS science kits on erosion. The kids, it was a great experiment. The kids created essentially sedimentary areas. Then they ran water through it, and you can imagine water running through a classroom. There was water everywhere. But it was really fun, and the kids really learned about erosion and deposition. And I think that's a fourth grade skill, and it's something that I think, as I talk to the teachers, they're pretty excited about the next generation science and getting involved in all that.
I would just like, Mr. Quisenberry, there something else?
Sorry.
I was invited last Thursday to by a member of my neighborhood, who's a Masonic Lodge member, to go to what I thought was a fundraiser at Hawthorne. And when I got there, what I discovered was it isn't a fundraiser at all. It's a family party, a family picnic dinner that's put on by the lodge. For all the members of the Hawthorne community. And they've been doing this for decades. They chose Hawthorne years ago to adopt. And I was totally unaware of that. It was a lovely evening. It was a beach-themed evening, beach balls flying everywhere, just a great deal of community and family spirit. So I just wanted to a little shout-out to the local lodge and for their good work. And I think that looks like all the comments we have for tonight. So thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Thank you.